last year, actually, the day that I applied for the grant, I had a local farmer that sent me a message about something that we served at school that day and said, it'd be nice if you could use local foods for that. And I wrote her back, write an email. I said, I'm actually sitting in a farm-to-school workshop right now when you're telling me this. So.
Welcome to the 386th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. Farm to school is a little bit like puppies and apple pie. It's hard to find anyone opposed to the idea. After all, it truly can be a win-win for both the kids eating fresh, healthy food and the farmers who are producing it. However, taking a positive concept to reality can be challenging, especially for cash-strapped rural schools that lack basic kitchen infrastructure. A recent report LSP helped put together verifies that farm-to-school is a popular idea, but there's a reason it hasn't been universally adopted. The report, which is entitled Building the Farm-to-School Network in West Central Minnesota, uses interviews with school food service providers and farmers to get a sense of the interest that exists for connecting the field to the cafeteria and the challenges that get in the way of forging such links in the food chain. Barriers to either starting a farm-to-school initiative or expanding an already existing one include labor shortages, limited knowledge of how to connect with local farmers and processors, product seasonality, inadequate storage and prep space, and uncertainty about the availability of government grants. In Ear to the Ground 385, I talked to Janine Bowman, the food service director for Morris Area Schools. She shared with me how her cafeterias have built up a fairly successful farm-to-school program utilizing grants from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, as well as support from the Morris School Board. The Morris schools are located in a rural area of West Central Minnesota, but are relatively large compared to other schools in the region. For example, its food service program serves 850 lunches daily. Contrast that with the Clinton Gracefield Beardsley School District, which is a 40-minute drive west of Morris. That system serves lunch to about 300 students a day and is in the process of closing its elementary school in Clinton, further consolidating its infrastructure as small towns in the area shrink. But Janine Teske, who is CGB's food service director, believes that students at small rural schools deserve an opportunity to eat fresh, nutritious food as well. She's been impressed with how farm-to-school has taken off in Morris and sees Janine Bowman as a bit of a mentor. So, last year, she successfully applied for a $5,000 First Bite grant from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. This grant is specifically targeted at school districts and early childhood education centers that have little or no experience buying local food. It's a way for an institution to test the waters a bit and see how farm-to-school works on a smaller scale before potentially expanding such an initiative. It's particularly important for Janine to start small, given that her job at the district is split between managing payroll as well as coordinating food services. That means she's very strapped for time when it comes to overseeing the feeding of the students. Since receiving the grant last year, Janine has done exactly what First Bites is intended to support. She's used the money to purchase fruits and vegetables from farmers who are part of two Hutterite colonies in the area. The trial process has verified that, yes, students love having fresh options, and that when you go looking, there are local farmers available to provide that food. But it's also helped reveal the barriers a small rural district like Clinton, Gracefield, Beardsley faces. For example, the school's kitchen is very limited in its ability to handle and process whole foods. That's one reason Janine is planning on applying for a bigger grant from the MDA that would help fund equipment upgrades, for example. I recently stopped by Janine's office on the bottom floor of the Clinton Elementary School to talk about her experience giving farm-to-school a trial run and what opportunities she sees for sourcing more food locally. She started our conversation talking about how she was drawn to testing out farm-to-school in the first place. So when you first heard about farm-to-school, what was it that you, why did you think it was maybe was something you wanted to, because it's more trouble, you know, yes. And you got to apply for grants, but why was it that you thought it was worth maybe the school looking into?
Well, mostly for the vegetables. You know, I haven't done a lot with the meat.
Is one of the draws to this is maybe to help, maybe let the kids know where their food comes from, but also to support that local farm economy a little bit?
Especially with the great opportunities we have. I haven't quite figured out where I can get everything yet, mm-hmm. especially local to the Clinton-Graceville-Beardsley area. Checked out the farmer's market, but there isn't the volume that I need there. So if I go to the farmer's market and I want to serve, I need 300 for one meal, so it's kind of like, well, I need tomatoes to serve for 300 kids. They don't necessarily have that much at the farmer's market. If I get from, for instance, we get a lot of onions from the colonies, and I try to purchase from both of them, and then they like to give us a good deal. The biggest problem I found right now is that a lot of the foods that I really want are summer and late fall before school starts. So we did have some sweet corn this year. That was really, the good. And then, I'd love to do like strawberries and things like that, but you can't get them in season when it's, school starts in September. So, but some of those items, I'm just, thinking of things that we get. Cantaloupe, watermelon. We had watermelon last week and it was still really, really good watermelon. So, that's even almost late in the season. So, you kind of miss the sweet corn. So, that's earlier in the year. So those are some of the things, but cucumbers. I'm going out there today to get some squash because we have squash on the menu for next week. And not everybody likes that, but we try to offer that for an opportunity for the kids to try something new. And the state of Minnesota, USDA, has lots of opportunities. We got stickers for the kids. I'm participating in the Apple Crunch, the Minnesota Apple Crunch, to get some local apples. And
well, I know that's a big issue for a lot of schools is jibing the school year with the growing season and when stuff is available. But yeah, and you've kind of alluded to this, but can you give me just a rundown of all the different kinds of local foods that you've been able to in the last, I guess it would be the last school year, and then we're in October here, so we're starting this year's school year.
Yeah, it was probably from January when we found out we're a recipient of the grant. So I kind of made a list. So I have cucumbers, sweet corn, watermelon, cantaloupe, squash, onions, apples, tomatoes were things that I've purchased from the colony. The thing I have to figure out still, and I'm still learning as well, is, if I find a local producer of beef per se, and I know that Janine does that through the Moore School, so just to find the butcher that can, able to do some of that for us as well. So I'm, like I said, I'm learning to try to figure it all out too. And $5,000 is great, but it's not if I want to serve beef for the kids, and have it processed, it's probably not. One thing I looked into was the vineyard in Dawson. That I'm going to write into the next grant would be an opportunity. And I talked to the gal that runs that and doing a field trip where you take the kids to the vineyard and then they pick the grapes and then they get to, they get to pick them, they get to taste them, and then we bring them back and then we have them for lunch the next day or something on that order. So with Holly at the vineyard in Dawson, that'd be kind of a fun thing to do, I think.
That's really cool. And that's the thing I was going to ask you about too, is have you been able to kind of integrate some, I guess, classroom education or some kind of outreach to the kids to say, okay, this is a source of your food, this is kind of nutrition, I don't know, some of that education around it?
That's the goal. I mean, and like I said, I'm new, so as much as I'm new and then training my staff to be able to do that. But I think with the stickers, and I just ordered some posters for the Apple Crunch, so we'll do that as well. It's kind of funny because when my kids that are in their 20s were in school, there was a program that was provided by, I think the Food Shelf did it, and it was where my kids were each given an apple tree, and I think we have a cherry tree for one of my kids. So we planted these trees in our yard. I said, unfortunately, by the time they started producing product, that my kids were grown and gone. So now I get to deal with the apples, but we have apples like crazy on these trees. So that's one of the things that we're going to bring in. And I know that there are several people in, well, basically every kid at Clinton Graceville Beardsley School has got an apple tree back in the in the early 2000s, and now we've got all the moms and dads have these apples that they need to do something with, so it's kind of fun. But so that part of the Apple Crunch I thought was a good thing, and so I'm trying to figure out what to do and how to do it and how to make it part of a everyday thing as opposed to a special deal. You know, and that's the thing. If you can do that, that would be the goal, you know, so that the kids recognize. I know that, you know, and I've every time I see Janine, I ask her, Janine Bowen from Morse, every time I see her, it's like, we do the hi Janine, and then we find out, you know, what she's doing, and so try to get a good ideas from her because she's really good at it, and she's done it for quite a while. So
I think that's a super good point that this is a way for you to dip your toes in the water a little bit and try it out, but it can always just remain a special event unless you can kind of make this part of your rig so that the kids see that, and farmers in the area too see, oh, this is going to be a regular market for us, and the kids also see, oh, this is something maybe I should expect.
Right, and also being able to find out if there are local people that have product that we would take, and I know that, you know, or that we would be able to, and that they can donate to the school, you know, that doesn't have to be, you know, even purchased, you know, if they have extra or something on that order. We did have a couple local gardeners, not necessarily farmers, that had an abundance of green beans, and she brought those in last year, and it was like all the kids loved them, you know. They had a farmer or a local gardener this year that brought in a bunch of tomatoes, you know. We didn't have it enough probably to serve everybody, but it was enough to put on. We have the high school kids have a salad bar, so enough to cut up and have on the salad bar, or, you know, some sliced tomatoes. And but to just be able to be able to have opportunities. I know some of the schools do every Thursday, is, you know, or every particular day of a week, or every, that would be something to include in our planning.
Do you know roughly how many farmers you are sourcing, that you have been able to source food from?
Mostly right now I've just done from the colonies. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the extent of it right now, because I'm just getting going in it, and I, again, like $5,000 is a great opportunity, but it's not enough to, you know, to say I want to make a commitment to you so that you do this in order for us to use your product. So
how far are the farmers that are in the colonies, how far are they from here?
The Big Stone Colony is about 5 miles, and the Lismore Colony is about 12. Yeah. Their garden centers are typically where I buy from. So
that's what I was going to ask, was that I would think that one challenge would be sourcing, kind of figuring out where that is. But it sounds like, kind of starting out here, you're able to kind of go to the colony and say, okay, it's like a one-stop place a little bit. That's maybe, you're not running all around the county. You'd like to source more if you had more money, it sounds like, but you don't have to run around a lot right now to try to figure out some of that source.
Right. And there's other opportunities, I would think. I mean, other places that if I knew about them a little bit more, or, you know, and just having the opportunity to reach out to them. And I've had several reach out to me, and a lot of times it's things that, you know, that it maybe am not serving, or just trying to figure out how to include it, you know, some of the things that the kids aren't used to eating,
right,
you know,
right.
the kale and the zucchini and some of those types of vegetables and things that aren't always on our menu, because they're not the easy, let's take it out of a box and throw it in the, you know, which we, you know, we had to do a lot of processed food during COVID because we were cooking it and taking it, you know, so it was, and I wasn't here then, but I've heard some of the stories about how some of that went. So getting back into doing more scratch cooking as opposed to taking it out of a box and put it in the oven and serve it, the fast food type.
That must have been an adjustment for the kitchen staff, too, to be working with more Whole Foods.
They're learning, and you know, there's the challenge for that because it takes longer. It's a lot more work, and you know, my cook comes at 6:30 and gets things ready, and the other staff come at, you know, or my head cook, and we're only serving 300 a day, so, I mean, when there's more than that, but in addition to the commodities that we get from the federal government, the hamburger, chicken, have a lot of that and try to figure out what can I use hamburger and chicken, you know, or other, you know, other, some of the commodity products or the vegetables that come with commodities. And it's a great program, and it's nice to be able to have that because you're paying a lot less for that. I mean, you're still paying for it, but it's also a good benefit for the district because it's, I can't say basically free, but there's a lot of opportunity to use that spaghetti sauce. You know, what am I going to, you know, these are the items that I get in commodities now. What can I use? And I'm not the cook. So then I also have to say, hey, you know, Colleen, what do you want to make with this food? So we've been really creative with chicken. You know, we have chicken tacos, chicken, you know, lots of different things with chicken and hamburger. So, and that's kind of where a lot of our foods are. So if it's not a piece of pizza or a chicken nugget that you're going to throw on the stove, hamburger gravy, you know, that's something, you know, just a lot of different menu items and things that are not necessarily farm to school, but just opportunities to give our kids something different.
Well, that brings up the most important question. What has been the response of the kids? What do they think?
Oh, they love the fresh vegetables and the fresh fruit. You know, the day we served the watermelon, and I did have an opportunity to get some strawberries like early that was last year. We served some of those, and you know, anything that's fresh, they love. You know, I can't hardly keep them. No, you get one serving, you know, because otherwise you're not going to get any of the later lunch group. So, but the kids are open to trying for the most part. I'm hopeful that with some more opportunities and some more education, and the teachers are very willing to work with me. Just have to find the right time and the right opportunities to do that.
So that $5,000, that basically went directly into the farm economy. I mean, it's a, like you said, it's not a whole lot of money, but it is, it shows, I guess it seems like an example where you can show, hey, by buying local, we're able to put this into the local economy a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, it had to be used to purchase food, and it had to be food that was farm to school related. So try to work with our local grocery store, Bonnie's, and in Graceville Market as well, to, you know, buy a few things that we can from them. And if we can't get it off the truck and she can get it, so then we, you know, if there's some opportunities to look, and I'd like to be able to do that as well, because they're struggling, because, you know, so if there's things that I can do and she can provide me with that opportunity and pricing, and we do that as well. So
you had kind of talked about your challenges a little bit, but I was just wondering if there was any other challenges that you maybe were surprised, like when you first applied for the grant and thought, oh, this money's available, we'll give this a shot, that you kind of caught you by surprise. It's like, oh, I didn't know we would have this challenge of doing something like this.
Well, when I first applied for the grant, I had some ideas of things that we could do, but it just, timing, and you know, when you get the grant, and then it's like, okay, now I have to use it by this date, and then I really, probably being new to the food service industry as myself, as well as only being part-time in that area, there was a challenge with that, and then time with trying to figure out how to get that menu planned and what to include. The other challenge with, you know, like you mentioned earlier, is the equipment. Do I have the ability to, you know, I have a steamer that holds two pans, so I'm going to serve 300 people with that steamer that's going to hold two pans, and I got to rotate, and then you have it sit. And, you know, unfortunately, the longer it sits, the less tasteful it is.
Right.
You know, one of the things I'm hoping, either some kind of an oven or a combi oven or I'm not even sure what's out there right now, but a steamer of some type to be able to include, you know, we're serving, I probably have, you know, like I said, about 300, so 150 there, 150 here, well, more at the elementary, but right now, but having them all in the same lunchroom next year will be a challenge to see how we're going to work that all out in one building, but also not having to haul food, so it'll be fresher.
You had talked about maybe you might apply for more. It sounds like you might apply for more grants, but is that something you're interested in?
There's a current grant, a farm to school grant that's available that, you know, like I said, I think was open for, you can do equipment and the grant. So you have to apply for both. One of the things that's tough is that it's also matching. We're going out for a referendum and an operating levy election in November. You know, depending on what happens there, I don't know if I'll have the funds to be able to match, you know, that. So you just don't know at this point, you know. So hopefully our district would be able to match that. But, you know, at this point, I don't know. You know, you apply for the grant and hope to get it. And then if it works, then you can, if the referendum passes, then yes. If not, then you have to think of other creative ways to do that. And, you know, with just thinking of the way the costs of food, I mean, last year, just every, you know, I probably every week ordering food, it's probably gone up about $500 a week this right now, just from last year to now. And we switched distributors as well, so that, you know, and you go by the distributor. We use the service co-op to do our bids and getting the, you know, the contract for who our food distributor is. So that's been a challenge too, because I get you know, just an example, yesterday we had sweet rolls for breakfast and they were different. So the kids looked, they're different. Well, I got them from a different distributor. Oh. They're different rolls. They're not the same ones we had last year, you know, but it's also not a bad thing because then they're trying something different. It's not the same that they've had every other time. So
$500 a week is a big hit for a small school district.
Yeah. And we're already barely, you know, again, it was, you know, COVID didn't help because you started buying all those things that you had to process food and getting back into some of that and using the commodities that we get and having the opportunity to do some more scratch cooking, which it takes more time, but it's not, sometimes it's a little cost beneficial for us, I suppose, having pizza every day or something that, you know, and then to have a variety. So we've started a process of doing some cycle menus where, you know, we've got 6 weeks of menus and we'll just recycle them all the time. So it's not so much having to, you know, restart every month. And things I'm learning that I didn't know as a mother, you know, of students, that all the planning and all the thought that goes into what your kids are getting fed every day.
Speaking of the grants, Annette, if you were able to get grants and you were able to get the cost share and the matching and all of that, and I guess wave a magic wand, you get everything you want. What would be your priorities? It sounds like maybe more money so you could buy more food. That would be one priority, it sounds like. But also, is equipment an issue that you'd like to, a gap that you'd like to fill?
Equipment is one thing. You know, I'm even looking at, you know, we've got in our kitchen in Graceville, we have just one cooking sink, you know. I'd like a sink to just, you know, just another three compartment sink just to be able for our vegetables, because if she's doing vegetables here and somebody else is doing meat prep over there, you have to time everything out so you're not mixing those things as well, and just time and space and you know, and like I said, the ability to be able to provide a steamer or some type of a piece of equipment that I'm, you know, and I'm not sure what we're going to get or even to look at yet and where to put it. To get rid of one of my convection ovens and put in a different type of oven and timing, and it's just all kind of...
Yeah, it is all. I mean, people don't think about that. Yeah. But it's a different beast when you're dealing with Whole Foods and all that.
It's a great opportunity because, you know, if you don't have that, then you kind of just do what you do. And so if there's an opportunity to do that, I'd like to be able to reach out to other local, you know, farmers. And I had a last year, actually, the day that I applied for the grant, I had a local farmer that sent me a message about something that we served at school that day and said, it'd be nice if you could use local foods for that. And I wrote her back, write an email. I said, I'm actually sitting in a farm-to-school workshop right now when you're telling me this. So, you know, it was kind of ironic that happened. And it was the same day that I applied for the grant. You know, there's opportunities in conferences. You know, everything costs money, though. Right. And so it's like you've got to, you know, pick and choose what you want to go to and what you want to do. And
any advice to somebody who's in your position who's a food service director at particularly a small rural school, how they would maybe start to look into something like this, or what if there's any missteps that you made that you want to admit to that to help them avoid a little bit?
Well, this was supposed to be my retirement job. And it's been a lot more work than I expected. You know, well, it's working out. It's working out really well, actually. And I like what I do, but I had retired from the university. So in Morris, and that kind of was a COVID-related deal as well. Yeah. Any advice I can give is to just keep applying. I mean, and trying new things and get a good team that's behind you to work with you. We're looking out for what's the best for the kids and trying to provide them with good meals that they're going to like, and, you know, asking for their opinion. What do you guys like? You know, when we make our barbecue, is there something that you don't like in it? You know, or have you found this? And standardizing things a little bit more than what maybe we've had in the past, and providing that out. They love mashed potatoes, you know, so, you know, but that's something that, you know, just find out what they like and being able to provide them with a good quality food. I know the food is much better now than when I was in school, you know, back in the 70s. But it's just being able to provide, I guess, something that they're going to like. I'm surprised kids eat lettuce like they do now. I mean, that wasn't anything I ever ate as a kid, but, you know, they see salad bars and things like that more and more often. So, you know, if you don't like the vegetable there, that you go over the salad bar. You know, if we're serving cooked squash tomorrow, they know that they can go to the lettuce salad and their carrots and the broccoli, you know, the fresh broccoli that they can get on the salad bar, and they don't have to take the squash, but it's offered. You can take it and try it. That's the other thing, too. We try to get the encourage the kids to just try it, if not anything else. So one thing I'd like to do with some of the, if we, you know, get another grant or something, is provide an opportunity for a taste night or something and try some new things and see if the kids would like them. But again, it's the funding to do that. I mean, I'm deficit or really close to deficit spending on our lunch program already, because that lunch money, which you may or may not know, the kids know that they get free lunches, but it's not free. You know, it's like we have to keep them, you know. I don't get to count that meal unless you take those three items at lunch, you know. I can't count it as reimbursable, so then I don't get paid for it. So, you know, we have to make sure that we're getting kids to eat.
So I know this hasn't worked out as your retirement job like you like, but it seems like you're kind of having fun, that this has kind of added a little bit of fun to your job.
I do not dislike it. I say that. There are days, you know, and it's challenging, but I kind of like the opportunities and to see the kids when things are good. And 98% of it's good. You know, you get the complaint every once in a while where my kid was hungry and this is all he got today. And it's like, and then you look at their plate and it's like, well, this is the plate I took and that's the plate that you have. And yeah, you shouldn't be hungry.
Yeah. But I was just wondering too, if with the farm to school, even though you're just getting testing the waters a little bit, that maybe it's, you have to be a little creative, and maybe that kind of helps a little bit to make it not such a humdrum, just, okay, we're serving the same food every day kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, and being able, having the advantage of having the Hutterite colonies really close or in our district too, was being able to provide that for our kids, because, you know, they do a lot. A lot of their food is, I mean, they cook a lot of their own and make a lot of their own. So just being able to have that and to expose the kids to things that this was grown in Big Stone County, or this was something that, you know, you could probably start your garden and make your own if you wanted to do that.
To read the report, Building the Farm to School Network in West Central Minnesota, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 386 at landstewardshipproject.org. Also on that page, you'll find a link to LSP's Community-Based Food Systems Initiative, as well as resources related to Minnesota Farm to School grants. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.